Untitled Soulmate Game, a Star Wars prequel fic, written by Ghost Owl, read by Dr. Fumbles McStupid, rating, teen and up audiences. With the relationship, Padme Amidala, Obi-Wan Kenobi, Anakin Skywalker. Additional tags, OT3, fluff, lots of fluff. The geese beat everyone up, so goose violence, I guess. But happy, happy, happy ending. This is the crackiest thing I will ever write. Crack. Alternate universe, the soulmate goose of enforcement. Geese. Fluff and humor. Humor. Y'all, I had a lot of fun writing this, and I think you'll have fun reading it. Goose assassination attempts. Summary. In a galaxy where the Force has crafted soulmates for the people who live in it, there are also sacred guides that appear to guide two lost souls together to seal their soul bond with a fated kiss. Unfortunately, the guides are also loud, feathered, and will bite you. The guiding experience is not particularly pleasant. Anakin and Padme's mornings both become much more exciting when they each wake up to pairs of horrible geese, hell-bent on leading them to their soulmates. Obi-Wan's already been kidnapped for a couple days, so two geese manifesting in his cell isn't a big deal. Chapter 1. Birds of a Feather. Anakin woke to a face full of rough tarp, a burn on his hand from catching what must have been the heat lamp, and a horrible, grating, honking sound. Trying to stand and falling straight on his face after tripping and becoming more entangled in his collapsed tent material, Anakin extended his hand for his saber, ready to defend himself against whatever wretched Agamari wildlife was trying to attack him. Instead of his lightsaber, Anakin received another brang and sparks of pain up his mechano hand as something latched onto his fingers. Anakin swore profusely and grabbed his saber with his other hand, igniting it and freeing himself from the dark fabric constricting him, just as something else rammed into his knees and sent him pitching over onto his back again. Agamar's cold weather seeping through his bones, Anakin only had a second to squint in the pale morning sunlight before it was eclipsed by a looming, shadowy head with bright, beady eyes. Anakin didn't think. He swung his lit saber at the thing's long neck. The saber blade bounced right off. Blue light illuminating just what exactly Anakin's attacker was, right before the damn goose honked loudly in Anakin's face and bit him on the nose. You're fucking off! Almost blinded with pain, Anakin shoved out wildly with the Force, and managed to launch the thing off of him, taking the flesh of the tip of his nose with it. Now awake, in pain, and more than a little bewildered, Anakin had but a second to lay on his back and catch a breath before the goose filled his vision again, diving straight back down for his face again with a high-pitched hiss. Anakin did not shriek as he rolled out of the way of the toothed beak snapping at his face just in time, scrambling to his feet and aiming a kick at the bird that was turning and nipping angrily at him. The stupid cis-spawn bird had caught his pant leg and latched on, and Anakin hopped frantically on one leg, tried in vain to hack it off with his lightsaber again, despite common sense knowing that if this was what he thought it was, and there was really no mistaking a Force goose, then there was quite literally no way to kill one. Sure enough, Anakin's saber bounced right back off the shimmering gray, slightly glowing feathers, and only succeeded in making the goose growl and shake his pant leg harder. Despite his throbbing nose, Anakin felt a little laugh leave him at the confirmation that this was, indeed, his soul goose. He had been waiting a bit longer than was standard for humans who received one, and had started to become a bit nervous. But now, here was the snarling creature at his foot, physical proof that the living Force had designated him another soul to specifically match his own. Anakin's ears were still ringing from the honk in his face, or so he thought, but as his goose jerked its neck and gave Anakin's leg a massive yank, his stumble forward snapped him back to reality, and the realization that the furious background honking wasn't coming from his own mind. Ignoring his goose's persistent tugging at his leg, Anakin turned back to the tattered remains of his tent. The brown tarp fabric was piled in a heap of poles, unmoving except for the furious lump thrashing around inside it, causing the tent material to rise and fall like a raging sea. The lump was letting out shrieking honking noises, and for a moment Anakin just stared at it in befuddlement, confused as to why.
"Master, I heard noises! What's... Oh my stars, is that your goose?"
Anakin startled at the sound of Ahsoka's voice, his apprentice having stopped a careful distance away from him and staring at the creature gnawing on Anakin's leg in cautious awe.
Congratulations! Ahsoka breathed, smiling widely. Anakin gave her a harried smile back. Thanks, Criff!
Two things happened at once. The goose on Anakin's pant leg decided it was done being ignored and let go, choosing to snap at Anakin's much more sensitive flesh fingers instead. When Anakin ripped his hand away with a pained grunt, a tearing noise and a snarl summoned his attention back to the chaos that used to be his camp tent. He looked just in time to see another glowing grayish blur bursting out of the tent fabric and charging at him. Ahsoka was yelling, "What the?" But Anakin was busy bringing his hands up and managing to catch the second soul goose right as it dove straight into his gut and bowed him over, taking all the breath out of him with it. Wheezing, Anakin used his remaining strength to lift this new, much more infuriated hellbird up and off his chest and away from his face, even as this one tried to catch his nose. His ears were smarting from the grating snarl honks of the attacking goose, and his arms were starting to ache from the beating of the bird's wings. Through his frantic gasps for breath, Anakin registered yanking at his foot as the other goose he had forgotten about decided it was a good idea to try and steal his boots. All the while, Anakin lay dying. He could see Ahsoka watching the entire circus with wide blue eyes. As hers caught his, Ahsoka blinked at him incredulously.
Two?
She asked.
Unless there's more!
Anakin yelled back, wincing instantly at his words, and praying to the Force not to jinx him. Groaning in frustration, Anakin shoved his metal hand into the goose on top of him's mouth, letting the pain circuits flare up as the giant bird shook it like a chew toy. Noticing in mild alarm that the other goose was starting to succeed in pulling his boot off, Anakin snapped at Ahsoka.
Well, don't just stand there! See if there's goose leashes in the inventory!
Ahsoka jumped, nodding once and tearing off into the center of camp. Thankfully, Goose Number One had lost interest in Anakin's footwear, but was now trotting up and yanking at his belt, asking him to sit up, which was difficult with the other goose hanging out around his chest. Anakin tried to push Goose Number Two out of the way as he sat and just got another deafening in the face and a cuff over the head with a heavy gray wing.
Okay, all right.
Anakin spat feathers out of his mouth and tried to scoot away from the pair of geese with his hands raised, halting at the threatening raising of their wings and loudened hissing.
Look, you don't need to be assholes about this. I know what you are, and I know who my soulmate is.
Anakin sighed as he was honked into silence, the pair of geese now seeming to be competing in who could blast his eardrums out first. Jerking his knee away from a warning nip, he ran a hand over his face. Then pulled it right away, because this was the hand covered in goose slobber, and Force did it reek. Fucking nasty. Sighing, Anakin turned his face into his shoulder to try and wipe the goose spit off on his tabards, looking back up in exasperation as his two new, vicious, literal winged wingmen.
But why are there two of you? He asked.
Yeah, that doesn't... If there was one general rule the Jedi liked to fall back on when the universe was trying its damnedest to not make sense, it was that the Force worked in mysterious ways. Nevertheless, it sure would be nice if anyone could figure out why the geese came. Since the dawn of time, the Force had always created certain individuals with soul connections. Not everyone's soul was connected, but those who were almost always proven to have longer, happier, more prosperous lives in the presence of their other pieces. In such a vast galaxy, however, the chances of finding one soulmate on their own was zero to none, so the Force had also developed soul guardians, spirit guides meant to appear when the time was right and guide people to their soulmates. Why said spirit guardians were vicious spectral birds called geese that could not be killed, had violent tempers, whose methods of guiding their assigned soul to matches were terror and harassment, and who would not return to the living Force until the moment the two souls shared a kiss? Well, no one had quite figured out the answer to that yet. Master Yoda said the Force had a sense of humor. The Jedi, possessing the Force sensitivity that they did, had spent centuries upon centuries of studying the Force Goose phenomena, and yet, very little had been discovered. Unhelpfully, the Jedi conclusion was little more advanced than any of the countless other cultures that had tried to solve the Soul Goose mystery. That the geese could appear to any sentient species, any gender, any age. Anyone whose soul was destined to not be alone. Sometimes there was one soulmate, sometimes more. The numbering differed, But the general way that it worked was that the geese would appear at random points in one's life, when your soul determined it was ready to be joined, and would remain by their charge's side and guide/harass their every moment until the goose found their soulmate. Once the ritual kiss was initiated, the geese disappeared, never to be seen again. The Jedi were not ones to doubt the strength of soul bonds, recognizing the purity of the Force's decision above all else. The natural form of the artificial and far more dangerous dyad that could be achieved through the darker side of the Force. For centuries, the Order had helped its members find their soulmates as soon as the goose appeared, and welcomed countless visitors that appeared on the steps of the temple with a companion of the honking variety. Not every knight in the Order had a soulmate. In reality, only about 25% of them ever received geese. But there were protocols in place so that the knights could continue their lives in service to the Order, but also live in accordance with the Force's wishes and chosen partner. A Jedi could renounce a relationship with one's soulmate just like anyone else could. The geese weren't binding. Only a singular kiss was needed to make them leave. And then, if one wished, they never had to talk to their soulmate again. Some more traditional worlds held far stricter views on the necessity of remaining with one's soulmate no matter what. But in this day and age, the common consensus was that while most people elected to stay with their soulmate, it was a decision that must be agreed upon by both parties. If a Jedi decided to remain in contact with their soulmate, there would be mandated leave times for them to go and visit. Their soulmate's name and information would be put into a special database so remote security could be provided for their home if needed, and the Order would be able to easily assist any of their now nominal members who may come across danger from having a Jedi as their soulmate. About half of the Jedi with soulmates chose to keep in touch, though with the start of the Clone War, the number had gone down substantially. As for the clones, the situation was more complicated. To all known records, Jango Fett had never had a soulmate. Theoretically, then, as his clones, no member of the Grand Army of the Republic would possess one either. However, as the unfortunate Kaminoans found out the hard way via sudden geese spawning in the cloning facilities and terrorizing the staff members, just because one was a clone did not mean their soul was not their own. So any of the millions of cloned soldiers had just as much of a chance to have a soulmate as everyone else in the galaxy. Army rules were then created that service was mandatory, and that if a clone received a goose, they could get their general's permission to go looking for their soulmate on goose leave. They were expected to use this to find their soulmate and tell them that the Republic came first. There was legislation already written for when the war was over, saying any clones with soulmates were free to go and live with them, but until then, their soulmate must wait for them if they wished to pursue their relationship. However, it was equally common for a goose to pop up in the middle of a campaign in which goose leave would have to wait. For such purposes, the Republic had developed battle strategies to allow the unkillable geese to follow their charges into battle, and for the army to accommodate the geese until they could be gotten rid of. While violent, the geese seemed to understand if their charges physically could not follow them to find their soulmate at the moment, and it was well proven that Force geese did not like droids. Especially not separatist droids. Therefore, devices like geese leashes had been developed for keeping one's goose with you. And it was these leashes Anakin was now sitting and waiting for a response from the Resolute about. If the ship's supplies included any more geese leashes, as they had none on the ground. He clutched the pistol-y bungling bundle in his arms tighter, having created the temporary solution of wrapping Goose 2, or was this Goose 1, up in his only robe like a straitjacket. The demon bird had already shat itself inside it, and on top of the stink, was still able to crane its long, snaking neck out to bite at whatever part of Anakin it could reach if he didn't watch it. Ahsoka was having little better luck with the other goose, having managed to grab it and relieve Anakin ever so slightly, but had almost immediately suffered with the goose's large size nearly toppling her, and had ended up with a quickly blackening eye, bite marks down the entirety of one leg, and a good kick in the gut as well as several scratches before some of the troopers had been able to help her put a crate on top of it. The geese weren't exactly fond of people who were their chosen charges. Anyone else who got in their way. Even now, with Ahsoka sitting twitchily on top of the crate, it would jolt forward violently, coinciding with another angry, muffled trumpet. Each time, Ahsoka would tense up in stifled fear, and Anakin would feel a little worse for her, if not for his own goose nearly tearing his ear off the last time he had taken his eyes off it to sympathize with her. Still, he couldn't help shooting looks at her angry crate and his angry swaddled not-baby, counting them again and again. Two. I have two soulmates.
It doesn't make sense. How is there another when I already have... I'm not able to leave the planet now! He snapped at his goose, as it once more started straining in the direction of the starfighters. You're supposed to wait until I can! Said his goose, waving its toothed tongue at him menacingly. Right, Anakin muttered, perking up as his comm beeped. Hopefully that was the Resolute, telling him there was actually an entire crate full of geese leashes they could easily send down to the planet without getting shot by 4 CIS enforcers. Yeah, like that'll happen. What would really make Anakin's rough morning was a call from someone else entirely, someone who hadn't answered any of his comms to her, despite him knowing it was the middle of the night on Coruscant, but still too urgent to wait even another minute to find out the truth he had been waiting to happen since forever. Unfortunately, his comm told him it was Rex. And as he answered it, a migraine began to form behind his eyes on top of the headache that resulted from the vicious headbutt the goose had given him. They want to talk to me right now? Like this very second? Anakin clarified uselessly.
I've got them waiting on the other frequency as we speak, sir, Rex told him.
Anakin opened his mouth to respond, only for his goose to stick its head out of its shitty bundle to bellow into the comm. Rex's clearing of the throat suddenly sounded suspiciously like laughter.
Should I tell them you'll be here in a moment? They did say it was urgent.
Anakin broke his staring match with the goose to sigh deeply through his still swollen nose. Yes, Captain. Tell the Council I'll be there in 3 shakes of their little tails.
All due respect, sir. I'm not telling them that.
Rex responded, with the curl of a smile in his voice, hanging up to Anakin's amused snort. Good humor fading, Anakin looked down at the struggling goose wrapped in his now unsalvageable robe. Do you think that if I pulled the hood over your face and put you in front of the holoprojector, we could make Windu think you were me? He asked the bird. I'm pretty sure the only thing he ever hears when I speak is a bunch of angry yelling noises, and that's basically what you've been doing all morning. How about it? Cover for me? Spat the goose, lunging for a piece of Anakin's hair and yanking. Cork, you little! Snips! Anakin called, trying to wrench his hair out of the goose's stinking mouth without getting partially scalped. I need to talk to the Council, and I think number 2's gonna actually bust through the crate if I tried to leave without it. Can you bring it along? He finally got the goose to relinquish his now soggy and matted chunk of hair with a shudder, jerking the robe's hood over its head for good measure to its indignant honk.
Yep, sure thing, Master, Ahsoka responded, in a much less assured tone than her words led to believe.
Fives! Jesse, no walking away! I need your help with this guy. Don't make those faces, she added. You're wearing full armor. A little goose shouldn't hurt you.
All right, Commander. But I gotta inform you that I've seen those things take out droid dekas.
Anakin heard Five quipping back as he turned to walk to the command tent. There was an almighty behind him, followed by yells from Ahsoka and the clones. But when Anakin shifted his attack bundle away from him to check on the others, he found Fives and Jesse securing a wing each with Ahsoka walking at the front, bravely clamping the goose's beak shut. Goose One, in Anakin's arms, let out a shriek on behalf of its colleague, struggling anew until Anakin had to stop and wrestle it back into submission before their little odd procession continued its way back to the command tent.
It wouldn't be such a hassle if I only had one goose.
Why do I have 2? Rex was waiting outside, and Anakin spotted his eyebrows rise up into his hairline at the sight of Anakin and Ahsoka bruised and battered as well as the 2 4-foot murder birds currently being escorted with their group.
So, those are the newest shinies, huh?
Rex commented, still eyeing the goose in Anakin's arms suspiciously. Anakin's goose bulged aggressively back at him.
Hopefully for just a very short period of time, Anakin said, peeking his head into the command tent before stopping, trying to figure out how in the Sith hells he was going to contain these geese during the meeting. To their credit, the 2 geese were surprisingly well-behaved from the moment Anakin stepped inside the tent and hailed the Council. When Yoda and Windu's faces showed up on the little blue projection, he spent 5 panic-riddled heartbeats terrified that one of the Masters was his soulmate, and that was why his geese were calming down. He then reminded himself that neither of the Masters had a giant feathery ball of death at their side to match his own 2, and that he was being paranoid. To the Master's credit, all he got in response to the geese were a pair of twin eyes narrowing.
Yoda's, "Your 4 geese, are they?"
And when Anakin had affirmed, a quiet congratulations from Windu, and what he swore might have been a small smile if he thought Windu knew how to do those. Any goodwill they had gained from Anakin, however, had vanished immediately at the Council's message for him, formally recalling him and his division off Agmar, as they had been threatened to do for weeks, even as Anakin had been staunchly lobbying for more time and additional backup. He knew he could find wherever the Chuta enemy droid general was, damn it! He just needed a way to actually move around the blasted Separatist-controlled planet, which meant additional troops if they wanted to make it past the lines of the singular slice of cold, stony outcropping he had managed to gain for the Republic when he landed. "Masters, if I may," Anakin started. "You may not," Windu cut in firmly. Anakin grit his teeth. "I'm sorry, Skywalker, but we knew this was a slim chance to begin with, and the Republic needs you and your men elsewhere, and not wasting your time and resources waiting for support we cannot send." "Wasting resources? Yeah, because my best efforts on this stupid ice cube means nothing to you." He could feel the irritation roiling around inside him, and Goose One warbled softly at his feet in a way that sounded distinctly judgmental. Force sent or not, Anakin was not letting a fucking goose criticize his behavior, so he made an effort to shove the frustration and anger back down and roll his shoulders back false casually. "Understood. I'll begin leaving preparations right away."
"Good," Yoda said. "Your troops back to Coruscant you will escort. A new assignment for you we have. Urgent. Very urgent."
At Yoda's words, a sharp chill rippled its way up Anakin's spine, and he made an effort to suppress a shudder. He didn't know why, but he was suddenly having a very bad feeling about all of this. Windu's guarded expression that Anakin had learned to recognize as brace for impact didn't help either as he shared a subtle look with Yoda.
"This is actually the purpose of our call," Windu told him. "We've had some concerning news coming out of the Dantooine system."
"That's where the 212th is," Anakin interrupted. "Not even that sorry about it.
What did you do now, Obi-Wan?"
"It is," Windu agreed with a warning glare. "And we just received an update from their command ship. 4 days ago, Master Kenobi went to the planet of Dantooine's surface to investigate possible Separatist activity. When he failed to return or report in on time, a search party was sent out. They found the bodies of the rest of the clone squadron that went down with Kenobi, but no signs of him. He's been MIA ever since."
"He's what?"
Anakin snapped, electric cold worry coursing through his veins.
"You're saying something happened to Obi-Wan half a week ago, and you're only finding this out now?"
"The negotiator sustained heavy damage from the last battle it took part in, and suffered a total loss of communication systems," Windu said icily. "Their message to the Order this morning was the first contact anyone's had with them for almost 2 weeks." Anakin bit back a snarl of worry. "So of course Obi-Wan chooses to go do something dangerous when there's nowhere to call for help. Force, damn it, Master!" Realistically, Anakin knew firsthand the pain-in-the-ass communications blackouts could be, and that the loss of their general had probably been the push needed for Cody, or whoever was in charge now, to get those comms back up and running to contact help as soon as possible. That didn't make him any less furious at Obi-Wan, his men, the Council, the damn Seps, or himself for not noticing anything was wrong. He was once again jerked out of his brooding by a sharp beak sinking into his calf, and he let out a pained yelp as he staggered to kick one of the geese off of him.
"All right, are you?"
Yoda asked, having the audacity to sound amused while Obi-Wan was in trouble.
"I'm managing," Anakin said harshly, kneeing the goose's head away.
"So you want me to help find him, right?"
"We would value your assistance, yes," Windu replied. "Which, yeah, piss right off with that. No one in the galaxy knew Obi-Wan like Anakin did. Would have a better chance at finding him. Absolutely no need to do backbends to avoid acknowledging Anakin was the best, the only choice for this."
Anakin nodded. "Right. Would it be better if I sent my Padawan back to Coruscant with the troops? I could start my search earlier. I'm closer to his last known location here."
"No." Yoda shook his head.
"Report back here, you should. More information we have for you when arrive you will."
Anakin tried to protest, but was interrupted by a drawn-out from the other goose, who had decided it had kept quiet long enough. His mouth clamped shut, face reddening.
"Oh, and good luck with your force geese. It's interesting that you have two," Mace commented, and that fucker was smiling. Anakin could tell.
Before he could say anything else, the council members made their excuses and ended the hollow.
Anakin whirled on his two feathered pests with a pointed finger. I told you both to behave. Anakin sighed. Fine, you're getting your way. We're leaving. At least I'll finally be able to get rid of one of you once we get there, if I'm right about anything. How does Coruscant sound to you? One goose honked and pissed on the floor. The other growled and made another dive for Anakin's ankles.
Ah!
Anakin hopped out of the way.
Perfect! Sounds like we're in agreement. Let's go.
Turning to leave the tent and giving marching orders to everyone else, Anakin tried to dismiss the whirlwind of conflicting emotions racing through his head and threatening to overwhelm him. This was supposed to be one of the happy days in his life, finally finding out who the Force had designed just for him. Instead, now he was facing the fear that the person he loved more than his own life might not be his match. The fact that there were two geese and not one, which meant a change to his pre-existing relationship regardless, and the fact that his master was missing. Anakin didn't care about soulmates that much, even if he left Coruscant again with two geese and not one, not enough to risk his master's life. Obi-Wan was in danger, and removing him from it was Anakin's top priority, no matter what else was going on. He made this resolution right as one goose decided to take a snap that just barely missed certain very tender areas. Padme awoke to cries of panic and noises that sounded downright demonic. Defensive training kicking in, Padme leapt up with the blaster under her pillow drawn, balancing unsteadily on the top of her bed, and freezing at the scene in front of her. Laying on her floor, babbling in distress, was C-3PO. One latched onto his leg, one gripping his arm, using her poor droid for what looked like a tug-of-war, were two glowing, gray, indisputable force geese. Padme couldn't help her sharp intake of breath, which unfortunately managed to alert the three of them to her presence.
Oh, Mistress Padme, please help!
C-3PO wailed.
They're trying to eat!
Padme wasn't paying attention to the rest of his words, as one of the geese let go of his legs with an ear-shattering, went flying at full speed directly for Padme's face. Shrieking, Padme dove off the bed and rolled into a crouch. Coming up, blaster pointed reflexively at the assailant, just in time for the goose to bounce off the bed and clamp its beak around the muzzle of Padme's blaster.
Hey, no, don't!
Padme wrestled with the goose in vain. She liked that blaster, before finally relinquishing it in favor of getting up and scurrying on top of the nightstand. She didn't want to actually hurt her force goose, even though common knowledge told her she physically couldn't. She still didn't want to attack the herald of what she had been waiting for her entire life. Padme would confess to being a romantic, a part of herself that had to be hidden once she entered politics, but had never truly left her since she was a young girl, reading a fairy tale of true love's kiss and happily ever after. That hadn't stopped her from falling in love with the idea that there was someone out in the galaxy just for her, and maybe someone else who was for both of them. As violent and angry as they were, these geese had never really bothered her, and as she watched other people she knew get harassed by the Force geese until they had found their soulmates, Padme had always felt the slightest tinge of envy. And then she had met Anakin, and the Force goose had still not appeared. She knew they were meant for each other, knew it from the moment she felt her heart pitch over at his smile, but still no goose. That was fine, then. Perhaps no goose was meant to come to her. No goose had ever come to Sola, who had been infinitely relieved by the fact and went on to marry her platonic life partner and have children of her own in total happiness. Anakin told her that they had to be soulmates regardless, goose or no goose. If no geese showed up for either of them, then they were both fine. If a goose did show up for one and not the other, they had both agreed to at least meet this person and see if they would be amenable to a polyamorous relationship, as many people in the galaxy who found love before their soulmates did. But now there was a goose, and she realized just how little she had prepared herself for the reality. No. Stars, now there were two geese. Padme hadn't even considered. Well, she told herself, that just meant that there was a higher probability for at least one of the geese to be for Anakin. Thankfully, her calm was right here on her nightstand, but first she had to brave the goose-infested waters of her floor to save C-3PO, who was still loudly soliloquizing his impending doom. Glancing nervously at the other goose growling on the floor and gnawing at her blaster, Padme hopped off the nightstand and over to where the one goose had nearly taken off C-3PO's arms.
"Shoo! Leave him alone!" Padme ordered the goose in her best queen voice.
She'd received an angry bellow in response, the goose letting go of 3PO.
"I am irreparably damaged," the droid bemoaned, and lunging for the finger Padme had stupidly decided to stick out and wag at it.
Ugh!
Stumbling backwards, Padme pried uselessly at the goose that had latched onto her hand hard enough to draw blood, tripping over the other goose who had come barreling over at the same time. With a pained cry, Padme finally tore her bleeding hand out of the one goose's mouth, just as the other started gnawing at her nightgown skirts. Ugh, she forgot how much these things stunk. Her comlink started beeping from her nightstand, and Padme flailed in its direction, dragging her angry goose along by her skirt hem, the other jumping and flapping with increasingly louder honks and getting feathers all over her room. Please let it be, Anakin, please let it be... Bail. Oh, good merciful gods, the Senate session today. Shit. Yanking her nightgown out of the goose's mouth and flinching as it tore a good-sized hole into the skirt, Padme retreated back on top of the nightstand and answered her calm, plunging a finger in one ear to drown out the now repeated from both visitors.
Hello, Bail!
Padme raised her voice to be heard over the clamor, spitting a feather out of her mouth.
What's up?
Ever the observant friend, Bail replied with a,
Padme, are you all right? I hear, are those birds?
Yes, Padme replied truthfully. My force geese seem to have arrived.
Really?
She could hear the surprise in her friend's voice.
Wait, multiple geese?
Padme released a frustrated sigh. Yes, two of them. I'm surprised myself.
Well, happy goose day anyhow,
Bail told her, and she could hear the genuine happiness for her in his voice.
I was going to ask if we were still on for calf this morning before the meeting, but as you obviously have other concerns right now, do you want me to tell the others not to expect you at this session? I'm sure Mon can speak for the bill.
One goose rammed Padme's nightstand with its head, and Padme took the hand from her ear and clutched at the wall for balance. She grit her teeth, trying to think above all the incessant honking. It wasn't like senators didn't regularly bring their geese to session when they had to. Secure parts of the pods had been created explicitly for leashed geese, as this was one phenomenon that was universally agreed that no one could control. But for star's sake, she was supposed to speak! Her coalition had been working on this refugee bill for months. If passed, it would not only help the countless displaced Republic citizens from the war-torn Outer Rim worlds, but also cement more alliances between Padme's faction and others, and put down some heavy hitters who had been trying to tank the bill from the start. She and Mon Mothma had spearheaded this particular effort, and while Mon could absolutely present the bill just as well as Padme could, and Jar Jar could be sent to vote on behalf of Naboo, Padme failing to appear could break this very tentative agreement she had made personally with various senators on the fence, and would view her absence as a trick or lack of support.
Okay!
Padme snapped at the geese.
Padme.
Right, she was on a call. Don't wait for me for calf, but I will be at this session, Bail. I need to present this. I can handle the geese. There was silence on the other end, and Padme knew Bail was debating the pros and cons of asking her if she was certain. A sigh told her his answer preemptively, and she allowed her hackles to lower, just the slightest, as Bail said.
If you say so, I'll see you there.
Wonderful, Padme agreed, hanging up and staring at the two pairs of small menacing eyes. I need to get to my closet, she told them. One goose hissed, revealing its horrible, gods-awful, oh, why are there so many that's not natural, maw full of teeth and tongue and teeth on the tongue. I need, Padme repeated firmly, eyeing the distance between the nightstand and the bed and the closet on the other side of the room, seeing how many jumps it would take to get there. To get to my closet. The geese honked once in unison, bobbing their head in unison in a way Padme was absolutely going to take as a, yes, of course, we won't kill you, Padme. Padme leaped, angry bellows of the geese behind her, and more feathers flying everywhere, bouncing right off her mattress and tripping over the sheets, falling to the floor. A toothed beak caught her ankle, and she kicked it off, bearing through the pain and crawling determinedly for her closet doors. She was almost there, and then there were claws ricking down her back. And why did the beasts of the galaxy seem determined for Padme to never enjoy backless outfits without a layer of concealer? And wings beating her upside the head, tangling in her hair. Ripping herself free with a yell, Padme dove into her closet and slammed the button to close and lock the door, the space being designed to double as an emergency room in case of the worst. Panting,
Padme brushed curls out of her eyes and waited for her ears to stop vibrating from the close-ranged honk attacks, watching the door. She was safe. She was... There was a bang as the door shuddered, and Padme lurched backwards, then forwards, because no, and yet there it was, a dent in the door. Padme sprang to her feet, looking around her closet wildly. She was going to have to get dressed fast. An hour later, Padme was off to the Senate building in a speeder containing Dorme, Typho, and his entire security detail that, for once, Padme did not accuse him of overreacting for calling. Dorme was a life-saving dream who had brought Padme calf, two geese leashes, and a breakfast bar after showing up and watching Typho and his crew attempting to subdue Padme's geese without destroying the apartment. Dorme had even taken the time to turn off an absolutely hysterical C-3PO, who had been attacked again after Padme had barricaded herself in her closet. Padme was going to have to ask Anakin to buff out the droid's various dents and reattach his arm next time her husband was home. Padme pursed her lips as Anakin crossed her mind again. Inside her closet, she had made four calls, two to Dorme and Typho, one to Mon to explain the situation and discuss final plans that could be passed on the rest of their coalition, and one to Anakin, several to Anakin, actually, after the first had not been answered. She had checked to see that they had called her thrice during the night, but had left only a single typed message saying that he wanted to talk to her as soon as possible. This had to be him saying he had received his force goose. Geese? It simply couldn't be a coincidence. But what if it is? Dorme's gentle tugging on her chin brought Padme out of her worried musings and back to where she was sitting patiently for Dorme to finish with her makeup. Padme was just grateful she had taken a shower the night before, because she knew that there was no sitting at her vanity and working on hair and makeup this morning, not with the geese around. So she had looked around for her most battle-resistant dress and came with a full head wrap and headdress so she wouldn't have to do any hair and messaged Dorme to bring the makeup kit with her. As Dorme covered up a bruise on Padme's chin, there was a squawking honk from the back seat and another yelp from one of Typho's security officers as one of the geese presumably hurt them again. Upon arrival at the Senate building, the guards managed to get the geese leashes on the geese and give the leads to Padme, who was near immediately yanked off her feet as the geese attempted to take off in opposite directions of the building. People were stopping to look, and Padme was strong, but still rather short, and the last thing she needed was a viral holo video of esteemed Senator Amidala falling on her face and being dragged off by a pair of geese like a comedy gag. I know, can you just... Look, it's only for a little while. Padme locked eyes with an approaching banking clan member. The bastard smirked at her and kept walking. Can you go hurt him instead of me? She grumbled at the geese, who were still gnawing the hem of her skirts to shreds. Instead, the geese abruptly perked up, then tore off in the direction of the side doors. Padme conceding to hitching her skirts with one hand and flat out running to keep a hold of them. Finally, after 10 different awkward attempts at congratulations, entire hallways full of stares, countless unsubtle hollows taken by paparazzi, Padme could see the headlines tomorrow. Naboo Senator with two soulmates? Will this interfere with all the other affairs we think she's having? One unfortunate incident with Goose Poo and the senator from Duro's shoe, and countless apologies as her geese terrorized numerous aides and other senators. She made it to the Senate area proper. It had been Jar Jar, of all of them, who calmed her geese down enough to coax them into the pod she would be sharing with Mon, and the delegation from Chandrilla squealing in joy at the sight of Padme's feathered hearts, as the Gungan called them, and running forward to meet them, claiming that Force Geese liked him. Padme was prepared to see her unlikely colleague mauled instantly, only for the geese to give him relatively soft honks and allow Jar Jar to take their leashes without complaint. What happened shortly after, she would blame on her hellish morning and take the first opportunity for someone to take the responsibility of her equally hellish birds for more than 5 seconds. Padme's geese sat quietly in the divot at the bottom of the pod, designed specifically for any Force Goose tagalongs, with their leashes tied to the pod rails. While other nearby pod occupants were giving them nervous looks through the first hour of session, the geese stayed blessedly silent save for a few stray honks. Far better than some other memorable instances of forced geese misbehaving during Senate sessions. The most recently infamous being the goose that got stuck in its senator's headdress.
At long last, the subject of the refugee bill came up, with Palpatine yielding the floor to Padme. Moving her pod forward, Padme bowed her head respectfully to the Chancellor and gave the dome a polite smile. "Thank you, Your Excellency. Senators of the Republic." Her speech was going fine. Her speech was going great, if she was to be perfectly honest. The geese were still silent. She was just winding down on her closing argument and preparing to yield her time to questions when everything that could possibly go wrong went wrong. Padme made a sweeping gesture with her hand, noticing a goose feather drift off her sleeve at the motion. Beside her, she could hear Jar Jar snort. Jar Jar continued to sniffle. Jar Jar sneezed loudly, stumbling forward with the motion. Jar Jar tripped over his own feet. Jar Jar flailed wildly, catching the pod rails for balance. Jar Jar knocked the geese leashes free. All of this happened in a span of 5 to 10 seconds, Padme turning to Jar Jar in alarm, just as there was a great, horrible sound rising from below her. One of the geese shot out of the pod, a feathery missile making a beeline directly for the Chancellor's pod. Padme could do nothing but watch in horror, as with a great yodeling roar, the goose cannoned directly into the gut of Sheev Palpatine, knocking him clean over the side of his pod to the screams of the entire dome. Padme's jaw dropped, standing in the middle of the chaos as the goose flapped back around to perch on the rail of the pod, easy as you please, cocking its head at her. It asked. Despite her participation in the assassination attempt against the Chancellor of the Republic, Padme's bill somehow passed. Palpatine, in a feat of strength and agility not many had expected from a man his age, had managed to catch part of the underside of his pod as he tumbled, preventing him from plummeting hundreds of feet to the faraway dome floor. Padme had watched him hang there, waiting for Senate security to come rescue him, struck silent and mortified and completely frozen in place. Before Mon took control and steered the pod back to its original position, security meeting them as they arrived and stressing that while they understood Senator Amidala could not have anticipated her, afflictions to do what they did, the man saying this jumped back as Padme's non-separatist goose hissed and snapped at him. Would the Madam Senator consent to waiting outside the session with her affliction for the safety of the other members? Padme had smiled in what was definitely more of a grimace, and said that she wasn't feeling that well. She might just go home. The entire incident had been televised, so when Padme had appeared at her speeder, towing her two happily honking geese behind her with a face that looked like death, Typho said nothing and drove them back home. On the way, Padme drafted and composed a detailed apology message on her pad, only having to stop Goose 1 from pitching itself over the side of the speeder once, and Goose 2 from trying to eat Typho's hat twice. On the third time, it succeeded. Sending the message off to the Chancellor, along with a request for an in-person meeting as soon as possible, Padme leaned back in her seat and shut her eyes, trying to block out this entire day. "Ow," Padme said, only half-registering one of the geese gnawing on her arm. This being the same arm they had already scratched up this morning. She supposed it was going to start bleeding again. Her comm chimed as they reached her balcony, and Padme stared surprised. The Chancellor's secretary must have been staring right at their pad when her message came through, she thought, quickly bringing up her comm to answer. "Anakin!" Heart in her throat, Padme felt a moment of cowardice, thanking Typho and hurrying inside, for once being the one to haul the geese after her instead of the other way around. They had promised to stay with each other regardless of the soulmate situation. But what if... One of Padme's murder birds solved the situation by honking and making a snap for her calm. "Hey!" she hissed, tugging it away and in her hurry accidentally pressed the answer option. As the blue projection shimmered into view, Padme slid down the wall with a thunk, resolving to face the music. Anakin's face didn't appear in the projection. Instead, she had her husband's voice saying,
"Surprise!"
and the massive glaring head of a goose. Padme gasped. The goose on Anakin's end opened its toothy mouth and tried to eat the recorder.
No, you little... stop!
Anakin was squawking back at it, coming into view with a fearful smile on his face. Padme found herself struck dumb. It's really him.
Well,
Anakin said, smiling at her hopefully. She could see the worry in his eyes. He looked so very tired. "Mine showed up this morning," Anakin told her, looking anywhere but her face.
Did you?
One of Padme's geese took the opportunity to stick its face in front of the recorder and give a firm holler.
Anakin's goose started honking immediately in response. So between that one and both of her own starting up in a full frenzy, Padme almost didn't hear Anakin's whoop.
Padme, you have a goose! I have a goose! We did it! Angel, we're soulmates!
Padme could feel the tears building up in her eyes as her bruised face fit into a smile. We're soulmates, she whispered back, peering over the gray cloud of feathers in front of her to catch her husband's. Her soulmates, beaming, brilliant smile.
Wait a minute,
Anakin said, cocking his head to see the tangled ball of geese swarming in front of Padme's camera.
Do you have more than one goose, too?
Obi-Wan opened his eyes to darkness, which wasn't new, considering his situation for the past couple of days. If Cody were here, he would absolutely be hitting him with the I told you so, which would be fair, considering that the trap on Dantooine hadn't been the first trap Obi-Wan had waltzed into on this cursed campaign. The initial mission directive had been to head to the Ryobalo sector in search of rumored Separatist-aligned rogue terror cells, using the remote sector as their base to run and hide to after attacking hyperlanes. He had found them all right, and had spent the last month chasing down and dismantling the cells. The tactics surprisingly advanced, and the terrorists finding various ways to evade him for far longer than he would have liked. They were especially efficient at plotting ambushes that took out large numbers of Obi-Wan's troops. They had just won a brutal space battle against what seemed to be the majority of the cell's fleet, ready to go home once repairs to the Negotiator were completed, hovering above Dantooine. Ready to go home once repairs to the Negotiator were completed. Hovering above Dantooine, Obi-Wan had rather foolishly jumped at the chance to ensure there was no resurgence. A distress signal picked up by intelligence that hinted at a singular spearhead for the entire terror operation that was coming from the surface of Dantooine. It was just simple recon, he had told a wary Cody, leaving his commander in charge of the ship and taking a squadron down to the surface in the cover of night, where an old network of abandoned tunnels had been spotted on the radar. Just to look to see if anyone was there, he had promised, and then he would come straight back and decide what further steps to take depending on what he found. They had hardly been on the planet for a half an hour when the electropulse went off, sending a violent shock to Obi-Wan's system and knocking him straight out. He had woken up in force restraint chains in a dark metal room. The smell of recycled air and the scent of floating in the force had told him he was on a ship and not a planet. But beyond that, he could not tell where he was. He could be anywhere in the galaxy right now. He did not know who his captors were, exactly, but he strongly suspected the terrorists he had been chasing. They had only shown up once, on the first day, shadowy figures in dark clothing and cloth face wraps that only showed their eyes. They spoke Outer Rim Basic when they spoke to him at all, which wasn't much besides to tell him to shut up when he tried speaking to them. They didn't seem very interested in going near him, instead staying far on the other side of the room, and hiding behind a modified tactical droid they had instructed to hit him if he moved. The droid appeared to be faulty, as it seemed to take the movement of his chest or cringes from previous blows as a command to hit him again. While quite painful, Obi-Wan wouldn't even consider this one of the harsher beatings he had taken. And oh, it probably was not healthy that he had a readily ranked list of instances sitting easily accessible in his memory. And as the group had left, he had only been able to detect a few cracked ribs, a dislocated shoulder, a few loose teeth, what was likely a concussion, and bruises all over his body. Really, not that bad at all things considered. He could sense from his captors that they were afraid of him, and did not particularly want him aboard whatever ship he was on, so his concussed conclusion was that they were either hired for this, or had decided to capture him on the correct assumption that someone would pay for him. All in all, there were far worse situations he could be in while on guard. He was not immediately concerned for his life, though he did stay up at night, fearing for his men he had left behind. He hoped to all hopes that the ones with him on Dantooine had made it back. Either way, Cody would know he was missing immediately, though the fact that the bloody comms were all down might pose a slight hiccup in calling for any sort of help. Currently, he had spent the last however many days he had been here. His internal clock told him likely no more than a week, thinking on how to escape. Twice a day, the tactical droid that had beat him and was now guarding his cell slid a small biodegradable cup of water through the door bars, the second cup always coming with an unwrapped ration bar. It wasn't much, but it kept him from starving or dehydrating. Yesterday, however, had not been terribly pleasant. Obi-Wan had been fooling around with the locks on his manacled wrists, only to discover that apparently, with enough fiddling, the cuffs did not break. Oh no, instead the wearer was painfully electrocuted. Quite fun, absolutely. Would not recommend after being shocked only a few days prior. He had aggravated his rib injury and his concussed brain, and despite every medical rule telling him not to, had passed out into sleep on the hard floor afterwards. Now he had woken up because he swore he had heard noises, and was currently jumping in alarm at the immediate sensation of another living creature in the dark cell with him. No. Wait. As his eyes adjusted to the gloom, Obi-Wan was able to make out a faint gray glow from the creature. Was there one or two? He was concussed. Creatures, and the sparkling of small eyes. Obi-Wan squinted, putting up a hand to stop the creature's approach, and hoping he wasn't about to get himself bit. Instead, there was a soft, feathery head nuzzling into his palm, while the other creature slipped under his arm and tucked into his side. Confusedly, Obi-Wan stroked their feathers, and the head under the hand vibrated with a soft, distinctive... Obi-Wan stilled. He knew that sound. He knew that sound. As a young child in the creche, he and his age-mates had been unfortunate witnesses to a forced goose incident still talked about in the temple. One day, the creche-master had led him and the other younglings down to the Halls of Healing to visit and hopefully cheer up some of the injured. They had just been getting ready to leave when a young knight floating in a Bacta tank summoned their forced goose. Obviously, the knight's goose could not get to them as they were in Bacta and needed to stay there to heal. What did a force goose do when it was separated from its charge? Attack everyone in the immediate vicinity, of course. Obi-Wan could remember the screams of the other children, shouts of the grown-ups, feathers flying everywhere, and the sight of an enraged monster bird, bigger than he was, barreling down on him, coal black eyes bulging with hatred, beak open to expose rows of sharp teeth, great wings buffeting him with bursts of wind while it unleashed an ear-splitting shriek of the damned. Young Obi-Wan had frozen up like a prey animal in the spotlight, the bird's fanged beak snapping inches from his nose before a healer had tackled the thing away from him, and someone else was scooping him up and carrying him away from the chaos. He had nightmares of demonic hissing and toothed tongues waking him up for the next couple of months, and had been much less impressed upon learning just what exactly force geese were. What his first encounter with one, as well as countless more, had told him, was all research on them had told him what society itself had told him, was that force geese were vicious, undying bastard birds with a job to do and a grudge to hold, and beware to anyone who got in their way. They did not, he had thought, rumble against his uninjured side in what could have been a cooing purr, or angle their heads into his hand for better scritches. Obi-Wan blinked. Perhaps these geese were defective. Or maybe it was the Force's way of apologizing for the childhood goose trauma. Whatever it was, his geese were not in the least bit angry or hostile. Rather, choosing to snuggle in closer to him, the one leaning out to peck cautiously at the chains connected to his manacles. Don't! Obi-Wan started to tell his goose, only to stop because that was his goose. His Force goose! He had given up on humoring the idea of a Force goose for himself well over a decade ago. And now he had two. Two people meant to be his soulmates. His head throbbed with a reminder of his concussion, and Obi-Wan brought his hand to touch it gingerly. Why now? He couldn't help asking the air, focusing on the why so he didn't have to drive himself crazy trying to speculate over the who. There was a muted hiss that could have doubled as a shush, and a feathered, snake-like head was curling around the back of his neck and guiding him back to the ground. Not having a clue what in the flying fuck was going on right now, Obi-Wan settled uneasily on his goose-down pillow made of an actual goose, the softest thing he had felt in days. He had two soulmates. What?